This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, September 1st, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is twitch.tv/AndyCortez.
Good morning, video game players. I'm making a thumbnail, so Bless, you just keep on rocking and rolling, big dog.
Andy, keep on rocking and rolling. Tell us about your thumbnail making process. What thumbnail are you making? What fonts are you using? What colors are you using?
That's for Marvel's What If for their Disney Plus show. Because you know we have another YouTube channel. I don't know if you knew that, Bless.
I don't like to talk about that YouTube channel.
Sir, understandable.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Don't put me on there. It's all Nick Scarpino over there. You know what I mean?
We gotta put him somewhere.
We can't expose the folks that come here for our Gamescast reviews to Nick Scarpino because that's when their opinion changes on Kind of Funny. That's when they're revolt. Like, oh, these guys are degenerates. Holy shit, I didn't realize it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean? How's What If? Because I've been keeping up with it, but I've not been keeping up with people's reactions and reviews of it. And so, like, so far, I like it, but I don't know if I like it as much as I like all the other Marvel TV show stuff.
It's very hit and miss for me, hit or miss for me. I think the writing seems a lot more cartoony and less serious, and it has been very kind of off and on, especially when they try to have their attempts at humor. I just kind of like, that joke didn't really
work. It's not as tight, right? Like, it's not as quick.
Doesn't feel... Well, no, actually, it's a little too quick because of the pacing, because they're trying to... Mm. In a lot of these... Let's remake these moments in a 30-minute episode, and it's like every line of dialogue is bah, 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 bah. There's like no room for a character to breathe and kind of have a moment of, wait, are you saying this and this? Like every line is delivered so quickly to get to the next line. Mm-hmm. A little too much for me, Bless.
I will say episode. I won't say what the episodes are in case people want to go into them blind and haven't seen them yet for some reason. But episode 2 so far has been my favorite. Episode 2 was the one where I was like, oh, shit, okay, they're onto something, because I'm really digging. Like, I just love the two universes that they collided in that episode. You know, both of those are the size of the MCU that I totally adore, so I like what they did with that one. The other ones, I've been like, okay, this is fine. You know, episode 1 with Captain Carter, okay, this is cool. The last episode, I think, has some interesting things going on with it, but, you know, I'm here for the ride.
Episode 3 was wild. You should watch episode 3.
I've seen all of them at this point.
No. Oh, okay, 4. Episode 4 is the new one. Episode 3 was the...
Oh, yes. Episode 3 was good.
I don't think it's a spoiler if we say the headline of the episode. Right?
I guess not. Yeah, because I guess if it's on a thumbnail, then like people probably don't care as much.
But here's the thing. In episode 2, I think it has the most egregious, like, cartoony moment. And it's hard to get past it.
Oh, now slack me what you're talking about, because I'm curious.
I'm going to just say Thanos. Like, I feel like...
See, that was the thing that I loved about that episode.
I understand that, like, that's a cartoon joke that they made there.
Well, 1,000%. Like, they couldn't do that same thing in live action because everybody would go, what the fuck is happening? They could only do that in a cartoon. I totally feel you there. And I will say, episode 3, for what the premise of that episode was, I thought that premise was really good. Episode itself was fine. It's that thing where, I don't know if it's because it's animation or the way they've just transitioned it into animation. It's hard for me to take a lot of the same scenarios as serious as I would in live action movies. And so they recreate a lot of moments, and I'm sitting here with like less tension in the moments. I'm less invested. And I think part of that might just be because I know that this is a What If universe. And I think the other part of it is the tone in animation is just different from the tone in live action.
Yeah, it does feel very Saturday morning cartoon is what Greg mentioned on episode 1, which, by the way, where's Greg at? I don't
You know what I mean?
He's been gone for a few days.
Gone for What's a few
doing?
Days.
What's he doing?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, in the first episode, I was saying that I really dislike that there's a jump that Peggy does, that like where she jumps like 200 feet or something. And it's
I know what you're talking about.
What the fuck is this about? Like, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I did like the violence, though.
Hey, by the way, gamers, Nazis. By the way, gamers, I am still playing. I played a lot more Ghost of Tsushima last night. A pretty good video game right there. Oh, pretty good video game.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All right. Andy, I'm gonna ask you all about that in the post show. But for now, Andy, let's talk about that new Dead Space tech demo. Big things for Tokyo Game Show and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about, except for today where we're not live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames because we are taking a day off Twitch in solidarity with marginalized folks over on twitch.tv, period. You know, folks have been experiencing a lot of hate, you know, a lot of hate raids going on, Twitch not necessarily doing a lot to fight against those hate raids, and so people are protesting in hopes that Twitch pays attention and actually does something about those hate raids and all the hate going around on Twitch. And so today we're not on Twitch, but of course you can catch everything we're doing here later over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can even listen later as a podcast on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, tomorrow our Surgeon Simulator 2 stream is finally here, and Snowbike Mike is going to play that on launch day. The catch, Kevin is going to use IRL robotic arms to mess with Mike while Tim and Joey hang out. That's happening Thursday, 11 a.m. So Pacific bizarre. Time. I don't know how this happened, but I'm happy it is. I am happy it's happening. Kevin, what's up with these robotic arms? How do they even work?
Bro, it's great. It's a PS2 controller, and it takes some getting used to, but I think I've gotten pretty good. Also, just so happened to work out that Mike is here, which means that, you know, I'm on the third floor. He's staying in a room in the second floor. Turns out I can use the controller from up here. So I'm so excited. This is going to be fun.
Oh, my God.
Bizarre concept. This is such a weird thing that we're doing, but I like it.
Very bizarre crossover going on here, of course. You can catch that Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. And then the VOD will, of course, go up later on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Then also tomorrow, you're getting a new episode of The Blessing Show, all about EA Sports Big. We advertised it a little bit yesterday on our social media feeds. And Kevin, I sent over to Assets a video. We have a promo video that is a small clip from the episode that I think is a must play to clue people in into the energy that we're emitting in this episode. And it's funny because we just talked about Snowmike Mike. Snowmike Mike makes an appearance in this episode, in this promo we're about to show. Kevin, let me know if you have the link or if you're able to pull it up.
I have the link and I will be able to pull it up shortly.
His energy way too strong. His energy is way too strong in this video, and I'll be honest with you, I don't love the energy.
I love it. Actually, I'll let the clip play for itself.
And so off Kevin, air, I told Mike about how this episode of The Blessing Show is going to be all about EA Sports Big, and I'd say his reaction speaks for all of us.
This Blessing Show episode should be all about attacking EA and how it's inexcusable that they have never remastered or retried the easiest idea on planet Earth. Oh, let's bring back Dead Space. Who in the wants Dead Space? Why are we not in the boardroom going like, why are we not bringing back?
He's
NBA
gonna deserve
space?
All the
Where
shit he gets.
Where is NFL Space? Oh no, let's bring back Dead Space. Dead Space. We want an NFL Street and NBA Street.
And I don't know. He's
together.
Saying the things that I'm
Holy
thinking.
Who's running that company?
I know Mike might seem overly excited, but that is him on a calm day.
He's saying what I would say we're all thinking. You know, Andy, are you with me? Fuck Dead Space. Bring back EA Sports Big.
No, I don't want this heat. I don't want this heat. And neither does Mike. He's like, the thing is, he's going to get, this is obviously a very pro EA Sports Big episode, but he's going to get caught in the crossfire from everybody saying, who the fuck is this guy? Yes, we want Dead Space back. Of course
like,
we
wait,
do.
No, you're going too far with it. Like you can want EA Sports Big, but not diss Dead Space. My favorite thing is that, like I mentioned in the video, that like this is off air. Roger and Mike got into a Discord call so I could interview Mike, because the whole point of his bit was supposed to be talking about how we're excited for extreme sports games. Like, we're supposed to be talking about Riders Republic and Shredders. And before we even got into the interview, he goes on that rant. And like afterwards, me and Roger were like, yeah, let's just use the rant. Like, fuck the interview. Let's just use that part. That was the best part. Let's go with it. And so, man, look out for that Blessing Show tomorrow. It's a banger episode. And there are more surprises in there. And so get hyped. Again, that's happening at 7 a.m. Pacific time with a YouTube premiere, so we can watch it all together. Get into the chat. Have a good time. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack and the Kinda Funny Destiny 2 PC clan. Today we're brought to you by Purple Mattress, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
Baker's Dozen.
Starting with our number one, speaking of Dead Space, we got new Dead Space footage shown off yesterday by EA. They did a long stream. They showed off footage, like alpha footage. I don't know if there's even a word for it. I guess tech demo would be the word for it, right? Like they call it an early pre-production development build that they're showing off here. I'm going to The Verge, who breaks it down into six things that we learned about the Dead Space remake. This is Adi Robertson. When EA announced it was remaking Dead Space, it wasn't really clear about what, quote, remake meant. Would the company be completely rebooting the beloved space horror series, or would it be more like a remaster that upgraded the original's 13-year-old graphics for the Xbox Series X, PS5, and modern PCs? Now, the Dead Space remake's developers have helped fill in some of the gaps. Motive held a livestream Twitch session with members of the studio's creative team, showing off extremely early footage demonstrating how the gameplay and level design could work. We still don't have a release date. It confirmed a few things that will set the new game apart, but won't necessarily transform it. The original Dead Space starred engineer Isaac Clarke as the silent protagonist, but in the game since then, he's been distinctively voiced by actor Gunnar Wright. Today, Wright appeared on EA's live stream.
That's a cool name.
Wright, Gunnar Wright. That's like an action, 80s action star name right there.
That's a sick name right there.
That's cool. Today, Wright appeared on EA's live stream to confirm that he is coming back for the remake as well. Dismemberment is going to be more complicated. Kevin is showing a video here of how some of the dismemberment looks like in this new game. Simulated limbs severing technology has advanced substantially since 2008.
Thank God.
The live stream featured some very early renderings of the game's necromorphs, and they seem affected by weapons in more detailed and convincing ways. Dead Space's remake will let you float in zero gravity, like you can in the game's sequels, rather than having to leap between surfaces with your boots otherwise anchored to the ground. There are no microtransactions. Motive and EA previously hinted that they'd build out Dead Space's story, and today they gave more specifics about what that might mean. Quote, "You're not going to change the foundation of the story, because that story is really iconic," said creative director Roman Campos Oriola. Quote, "The things we want to enrich in terms of story or narrative, it's really about the bigger universe of Dead Space. We want to have more ties with what came after, whether it's the books, whether it's the anime, whether it's Dead Space 2, we want to put the original in a better way inside that broader universe," end quote. The Dead Space remake also aims to provide more depth to the characters around Isaac, including Nicole Brennan, the girlfriend that he spends the game looking for. As Campos Oriola puts it, quote, "We want to give you the means to actually look for her, and more than look for her, learn what happened to her during the outbreak," end quote. Andy, I know you're not into spooky games. Are you into Dead Space at all?
Fuck no, Blessing. Fuck no. But I'm excited for everybody who is really stoked about this franchise and it being back. I'm especially stoked right now. Let me say this. Congrats to Jackie Butler and Cobb Jenkins.
Hell yeah.
Super stoked about... why did I say Jenkins? Adams.
His Twitter name is Cobb Jenkins.
It used to be Kaja. Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Sorry, Ka. But shout out to Jackie, who that's her first hosting job, and we know her through Alfredo. I think obviously Kevin and Tim have known her longer, but it's really cool to see her being able to do a cool hosting thing because she's really into Dead Space and has streamed it often. Dead Space doesn't do a whole lot for me, as y'all know. I don't love survival horror, and especially with this being the scariest of it, it seems like everybody says this is one of the more terrifying versions of a survival horror game. Doesn't do a whole lot for me, Bless, but I think it's really cool for devs to show stuff this early. I think getting the sort of mass audience to see just this part that we're doing right here, this is how much work goes into just, you know, enemy dismemberment or... You know, showing you Isaac's new the remake of the gun or whatever. Here is how much work gets put into this, and I think that's a really cool look behind the curtain for people who may not necessarily know exactly what it takes for a game of this scale to be made, and in this case, remade or whatever. But yeah, personally, it doesn't do a whole lot for me. Bless. Are you stoked for it? I don't know if you're a Dead Space fan.
I'm not really a Dead Space fan. I'm in a similar place as you, where like these games don't tend to do it for me. But looking at the footage that they
not quite Snowback Mike level, right? Not quite Snowback Mike level.
I'm not quite Snowback Mike level. You know, I'm not Dead Space, right? Like, I'm happy for the Dead Space fans, and I think the fact that they're bringing it back is a really cool thing, because I love the idea of EA bringing things back, because that then means that maybe they could bring back EA Sports Big. But what they've shown off in this development build, I think, looks really cool. Them showing off the dismemberment, it looks really gruesome, it looks really gross, and it takes stuff that people love from the first game and modernizes it and cleans it up in a way that is gonna sing as a modern game. I think that's one of the biggest things, is when I look at something like RE2 Remake, you know, the original RE2 wasn't a game that I was into as much, right? Like, I booted that game up a few times back in the day, but I was never all in on it. That game confused the hell out of me when I was young. But playing it in a modernized way and going through the museum/police precinct in that game that you're exploring, they do such a good job of taking that game and turning it into a game that in 2018, 2019? I think it was 2019 when RE2 Remake came out. Was one of the best looking games, one of the best performing games of that year. You know, I think that is a magical thing that you can do. And to your point of them showing it off this early, I think since it's a remake, and because people have probably such big expectations for what this thing should be, or what it could be, or what it might be versus what it might not be, right? Like, the article mentioned that they've not been as clear as to what they mean by remake, being able to show off like, hey, no, we are going back to the original game. We are taking elements that you guys like. We are, you know, using similar designs, or in some cases the same designs, but cleaning it up in a way that you're really going to appreciate. I think that's a really smart thing to do, because you're answering a lot of questions this early. And, you know, I think being able to give players and give your audience a glimpse into the game development process, it's just good for education in terms of what it takes to make a video game and the process of trying to stay true to the things that you guys love. I think it's also good in the fact that if they showed this stuff off and the audience had a bad reaction to it, if people were like, hey, this isn't true to the original Dead Space, that then gives them an opportunity in the process to maybe shift and pivot, which I think is also a really cool thing.
And they also have an out saying this is early in development, so don't judge everything based on whatever you're seeing right now. But I think it's really neat that they are doing this sort of early look. And if anything, obviously it seems like they want to stay true to what the original Dead Space was and what that gave to the audience. And I think they have the benefit of the doubt there, saying, yes, we can show you early alpha footage or whatever, or early developmental builds. And you in the back of your mind as a fan know, oh, this is how they are improving a thing that I already like. They're not necessarily trying to, you know, rewrite the formula. They're not trying to add a co-op character to play alongside of necessarily, like, they're still trying to stay true to what the original game is, but we're not going to get too wild with it. Trust us, here is the new suit, or here's the remake of the suit, here's how it might look with good lighting and stuff like that, because I know they showed a few screens of this is how the game can look, you know. I think that I saw a shot for shot comparison on some Twitter video, and I'm assuming it's somewhere in this video that happened yesterday during that live stream. I'm trying to scroll through it. I can't necessarily find it. But it's got to be really exciting for Dead Space fans to know that one of their favorite things is coming back in a brand new sort of shiny coat of armor. And when you talk about dismemberment, you got to have that, especially after playing Doom and all of the advancements there, where you're shooting off body parts and the enemies are falling apart. You have to have that in sort of this modern setting, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Doom is a good example to give, because, like, Doom, I love playing Doom Eternal and having the monsters fall apart as you take them out, right? Because it's a sign of, not only is it a sign of, like, you're damaging them, but it's just a cool visual way to show that off in a game that is trying to be gruesome and gross. Kevin Coelho, what were you going to say?
I was going to say something just that might be a little bit surprising. I love Dead Space.
Whoa.
And I know, that's like a big deal. Dead Space is, I think it might be the only horror game that I've ever played, and like, I enjoyed it. It's like, Andy, yeah, I'm not saying you do this for a stream, but maybe This game comes out. You don't open start. All the way. Just listen. Just, no, no, no. See, listen, listen. I'm not saying you do this for us. I'm saying turn on all the lights, open all the windows, but like play this game. Because just give it a little a taste. Because it's something, it's scary. It is. But it's also like you feel empowered as the character with this like cutter thing. So just, you know.
I might play it on my.
The cutter is cool.
I might play it on my front porch at 2 p.m. Outside when there's people walking around.
Lulu, I just need the. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
This is what I'll pitch. We do this RE7 style, where I play the game, you watch it on stream with me. We hang out. I go through the tough stuff. You get to sit in your room, turn on all the lights, not have to worry. You can close your eyes, right? You don't have to actually do the scary bits. So you can leave that to me. Because I do want to play this remake. I think the remake looks really cool. What they've shown off looks really cool. And, you know, I mentioned I'm not a Dead Space person. I have played a bit of Dead Space 3, which is the one that people would say,
yeah, hey, don't like that one.
Yeah, don't make that one the one you play. And that is the one that I played. But then I also played the Dead Space game on mobile.
All right, go away.
That one, I know I'm upsetting the masses right now. There's tons of people that are like, what the fuck were you doing? How did you make those two games the games you play?
This is Baird and Metal Gear Survive.
Yeah, it's like Baird only playing Metal Gear Survive. But playing the mobile game, I think that mobile game actually did capture a lot of the survival horror elements pretty well in terms of making doing a good job of capturing the moments of jump scares and what using the cutter is like and the atmosphere of Dead Space. There was also the Dead Space Wii game that I played a little bit now that I think about it, the Unreal Shooter.
Oh, great. Yeah, sure that's exactly the experience you want. I'd say the only thing that worries me about doing this sort of presentation is the whole, why are you showing us this early? This is clearly 4 or 5 years away, whatever, you know, like, unless yesterday's presentation was more of a like, hey, we've done a lot in the game, but here's an early look at how to tear apart aliens' bodies. The thing that worries me is that the impatience of the masses and getting really pissed off.
What I gather is that they're aiming for late 2022, whether or not they hit that. In fact, I'm going to go and say I don't believe they'll hit that, but it seems like the game is a bit more imminent than we may imagine. But I'm in that same place too, where the push and pull of how early do you reveal something versus how close to something do you reveal it is a balance that you gotta get right. For this, when you have footage to show, I don't mind it as much because at the very least, I like being along for the journey. And I think for those who are tuned in and clued into what it's like making a game, you look at this and understand where they're at in the process. You understand that this isn't coming early next year or late this fall. You understand that this is at least a year or more away. Right. But when it's something like Elder Scrolls 6, for example, it's like, all right, well, am I ever going to see this? You know, I don't necessarily love those, but I think there's definitely a
Metroid Prime 4.
A Metroid Prime 4, exactly. Andy, speaking of revealing games, let's talk about story number 2. Tokyo Game Show could have Final Fantasy 16. This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Square Enix has confirmed a 50-minute Tokyo Game Show event where it could potentially share a new update on Final Fantasy 16, according to recent comments by the game's producer. Square Enix Presents Tokyo Game Show 2021 will be streamed on October 1st and lasts for just under an hour, the company announced on Wednesday. According to the official event description, the TGS show will offer, quote, the latest news about our upcoming titles, along with pre-announced information, end quote. Last month, Final Fantasy XVI's producer said that Square Enix, quote, definitely wanted to share an update on the action RPG during Tokyo Game Show, but that it wasn't sure if it would be able to make the deadline. Speaking as part of a special Japanese Final Fantasy XIV livestream translated by Itai Kimochi, Naoki Yoshida said that if his team was unable to create content in time for this month's show, he'd personally like to next show Final Fantasy 16 when it's closer to release. Quote, we really want to show something for Tokyo Game Show 2021, but we probably can't make that deadline. We definitely want to show it, but isn't it better when we do, you're able to play it right after, end quote. Quote, I know as a company, they want us to show it at Tokyo Game Show at the very least, end quote. Andy, there's a lot of push and pull there, but basically what this is getting at is we might see it, we might not.
Which is, there's definitely a lot of push and pull there. That's really funny, just to kind of like, I know they want us to do it, but, you know, what if it's like right before? That'd be really cool.
What if we waited to show it? They want us to show it. And so we might show it, but also, like, what if we waited to show it? We might not have it ready.
Just a lot of suggestions, kind of like subtweeting right there. I love that. I would personally love to see it sooner. I think a lot of us would. But you know what they say, Bless? A trailer too early is a trailer bad. A trailer late is a trailer always good, yep. You know?
The famous Miyamoto quote.
Uh-huh. I mean, I'm stoked for Final Fantasy 16, dude. And this is somebody who never really played a whole lot of Final Fantasy games, but as soon as they started getting more into the less turn-based-y, more active battle sort of combat system, that's where I started really vibing with the franchise. And I can't wait for this game, especially knowing that it is going to be the next current version, generation, updated visuals, new lighting, like all that stuff really excites me.
PS5 to see, exclusive.
Like the fact that, you know, Remake 7 Remake already looks as amazing as it does on the PS5 with that new version integrated. I am super stoked to see what this could possibly look like. And I hope we get some hype with that.
Oh, yeah. That's not it for Tokyo Game Show. Story number three. Speaking of Tokyo Game Show, Xbox News is expected as well. This is Chris Skolian at Video Games Chronicle. This year's Tokyo Game Show will include some, quote, exclusive news from Xbox. Xbox has a 50-minute presentation planned for September 30th, listed as the Xbox Tokyo Game Show Game Show Showcase 2021. The event promises new announcements related to the Japanese gaming market. Quote, jump in and join Xbox as we bring our gaming ecosystem gaming to the world, end quote. The event description reads, we have some exclusive news and content to share, and Tokyo Game Show 2021 is our stage, end quote. It's the second year Xbox has held a TGS event. Last year, it announced flight simulator content related to Japan and discussed Series X/S plans in the country. The presentation will be the latest part of Xbox's attempt to make an impact in Japan, something it struggled to do ever since the original Xbox launched 20 years ago.
Andy, well, how long are we going to hear about these stories?
About Xbox
trying to make an impact in Japan? I don't really know what this could possibly be. And the fact that they're saying exclusive news gets me really excited. Now, what that exclusive news is, Bless, it could range from, hey, we're selling an exclusive controller here. Or so, like, it could be something as lame as and sort of not outstanding sort of announcement as that. Or it could be something really cool as an exclusive game announcement. I have no idea what this could possibly be.
I think the absolute ceiling, and I'm almost afraid to say it because I don't want to get hopes up for nothing, the absolute ceiling that this could be would be Kojima announcing an exclusive Xbox game. Because I think Tokyo Game Show could be the right place to do that, especially if you're talking about trying to infiltrate that market. And we've had reports, you know, we talked about it recently. In July, Jeff Grubb had a report about how Kojima is like, that man is signing papers at Xbox. Like, he is in the process of working on a game for Xbox specifically, and it's going to have cloud integration and all this stuff. I think maybe Tokyo Game Show could be the place to announce that. That said, when we look at what they announced last year, right? Like, again, what they had last year, flight simulator news for Japan, and then also them talking about launching Series X in Japan. And so, historically, you know, there's not the precedent there that Xbox is going to drop a banger as big as that, especially because that, I think, would be a global news item right there, right? Talking about a Hideo Kojima game for Xbox. That said, if you wanted to make a bigger splash in Japan, if you wanted to really, you know, own the message in that market and be like, cool, hey, we care about this market. We care about what we're doing here in
please
Japan.
Care you've about seen, us.
You, please care about us. You've seen us. You've seen us and what we've done with Yakuza. You've seen us put Yakuza, the whole franchise, on Game Pass. You've seen us put so many Final Fantasy games on Game Pass. You've seen us put. I'm sure there are even more JRPG franchises that they put on Game Pass. You see the waves they're trying to make. Let's, you know, really show how much we care by making this huge announcement in Tokyo Game Show. Maybe that could be it. But again, that is me being very hopeful and me like talking about the absolute height of what they could do.
I mean, 50 minutes that's a chunky presentation. This is not a 15-minute Nintendo Direct. This is not a 10-minute sort of, PlayStation State of Play. That's a meaty thing right there. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to wonder what the hell you can't even announce that isn't already known. Is it just going to be updates on things? You can't do that if you want to excite that market. If you're trying to get them to buy in, I don't think you prepare a 50-minute presentation on stuff that is already known, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we'll see. Like, I don't expect, outside of that, my proposed Hideo Kojima thing, I don't know what else as Xbox he would announce that would be super exciting for the market. Maybe more JRPGs coming to Game Pass, or more Japanese games in general coming to Game Pass. Maybe you
possible,
announce
possible
like,
remakes of old stuff, maybe.
Yeah, like possible remakes, possible like, hey, we're porting these classic beloved games onto Xbox, or bringing in games that were released, let's say, like on just other consoles, right? Back when, back during the Xbox and 360 generation that didn't come to Xbox, we're announcing that those are now coming to Xbox through Game Pass or through Xbox Series X. Like, I think you can do things like that. But you know, I'm with you that it's a large part of mystery, because historically, you know, as we all know, Xbox just hasn't had a good presence in Japan. You know, like Xbox in terms of sales, this is just tanked over the years, and I think. I believe Phil Spencer and the team, when they talk about how much they want to actually make a splash in Japan and actually like infiltrate that market. But it's just a difficult thing when you're up against PlayStation, and you're up against Nintendo, and you're up against companies that have actually done that well, companies that have actually cared, and companies that have actually like
put in the effort. Solidified ground, you know?
Yeah, solidified ground. That is such a difficult thing to do. But at the very least, it seems like they're trying.
Do you think maybe they make a push for like something not as gigantic as what I would want, but like the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters, which only went to mobile and only went to where else did they go? It was just mobile PC. Yeah, do you think maybe Xbox makes a play at that? That's something that I could see them announcing, saying, hey, previously these were only available on mobile and PC, and now they're coming to Xbox. All whatever six of them or however many it was, I could see that being an announcement of that sort of level is what I would maybe expect in this 50-minute presentation.
I could see that easily, especially because when we talk about what Xbox does well, they do legacy really well, right? Xbox is all about reaching back into the classic classic games that people loved and bringing them forward in some way, and so I think doing that fits in line with them. You know, we've even seen Phantasy Star Online 2 come to Xbox, right? Like, they really do care about trying to bring things that people are already invested in and bringing them into the Xbox ecosystem in a way that is in a way that's going to speak to that, either like the nostalgia strings, or just the, hey, there's already a built community here, let's move them over to us strings. So yeah, I think for sure they can do that, and I expect even more things on the level of bringing Phantasy Star Online 2 to Xbox. I expect more of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. Andy, before we get into story number 4, I want to remind the folks that, of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Purple. I know it may seem like it, but the world isn't really against us from getting a good night's sleep. Luckily, you'll have no difficulties drifting off to sleep on a Purple mattress. That's because only Purple mattresses use their fancy grid technology. It's a unique ventilated design that lets air flow through to keep you cool. I can tell you this as a fact. I have the Purple pillow, and I will never use another pillow in my life. I love it so much. It never gets too hot. It's always cold. You don't need to flip it to the other side because it's just cold already. I don't know how it works. It's the grid. It's cool. The grid is also supported for your back and legs while cushioning your shoulders, neck, and hips. Unlike memory foam, which remembers everything, the grid bounces back as you move and shift. Purple is comfort reinvented. Right now, you'll get 10% off any order of $200 or more. Go to purple.com/games10 and use promo code games10. That's purple.com/games10, promo code games10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/games10, promo code games10. Terms apply.
Story number 4, Brendan Player Unknown Green leaves PUBG Corp and creates a new independent studio. This is from Matt Kim at IGN. Brendan Green, aka Player Unknown and the creator of Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, has announced the formation of a new independent game studio in Amsterdam, Netherlands. Green was originally a modder whose experiments with the battle royale genre eventually led to the creation of Player Unknown's Battlegrounds. He was later hired by Bluehole to continue developing the game under the newly formed PUBG Studios. Following the success of PUBG, Bluehole renamed itself Krafton, and in 2019, Green announced that he was stepping away from PUBG to work on experimental projects with a small team in Amsterdam. However, Green is now leaving the company altogether to form his own independent studio, though Krafton will hold a minority stake in Green's new company. Quote, I'm so very grateful to everyone at PUBG and Krafton for taking a chance on me and for the opportunities they afforded me over the past 4 years, Green says in a statement. Quote, today I'm excited to take the next step on my journey to create the kind of experience I've envisaged for years, end quote. Green's new studio hasn't revealed its name or what it's working on, but in 2019, Green said he's done with the Battle Royale genre. Meanwhile, Krafton is continuing the development of PUBG and a sequel set in the near future called PUBG New State. Other Krafton studios include Striking Distance Studios, which is working on the horror game The Callisto Protocol from Dead Space creator Glenn Schofield, as well as a PUBG animated series from producer Adi Shankar. I just learned about that Adi Shankar produced thing today, and Adi Shankar apparently just works on every single animated video game series, so good for him.
Well, I think when you have seen so many video game to screen failures and you find the one that works, you just gotta keep rolling. You gotta keep rolling with it, you know.
Thanos. You're like, I'm gonna do this all myself.
Yeah. It's interesting because I sort of, for whatever reason, I thought that he had left the PUBG Corp a long time ago, but I was thinking of homeboy that made DayZ and then peaced out to make his own game, and then who knows what the hell, that game may have come out already. It was like some space game that was revealed a couple years ago, or it may not ever come out. But I'm interested to see somebody who has such experience with the Battle Royale genre, what the hell could you be moving on to next? What interests you? I don't really have much to say about this, Bless. I'll be honest with you. I'm just like, cool,
did
good
you,
for you.
Did go, you play go much be PUBG happy. Back in the day?
I did a little bit on PC and a tiny bit on Xbox, but I hated the way it felt on Xbox.
Dude, I hated how it felt on Xbox, too. Especially when it first released on Xbox, I was flabbergasted that they let it release in that condition. But I did play a bit of it on PC, and I enjoyed hanging out in the game with friends.
I was talking about Dean Hall, by the way. Dean Hall made DayZ.
But yeah, over the years, PUBG just hasn't had the same name recognition, especially as games like Fortnite and Apex Legends kind of overtook it in terms of conversation. That said, I'm sure there's still an audience there that loves PUBG and still plays it regularly, but I understand how player unknown, as a dude who just wanted to mod a battle royale mode, launched it, had to be super successful, and probably still in a lot of ways wants to be creative and make other shit. I understand how he's like, you know what, peace out, I'm gonna make my own studio, you know, you guys keep making this thing exist, you know, keep carrying PUBG forward, but I'm going to keep being creative and keep launching my possible future masterpieces, right? Like, I think for me, his movement speaks to somebody who wants to be creative and somebody who wants to keep, like, innovating in a way. Because PUBG, I would say, was innovative. I know there were battle royales before PUBG, but PUBG was the one to, I think, really cement what battle royale could be and blow up beyond what any other battle royale had done before it, and then lead to things like Fortnite, which is the biggest game in the world. Coming off of that, like, it seems like he wants to do maybe single player, maybe something that isn't massively multiplayer. And with that, you know, I'm curious to see what his take on that would be. It's not as expected, given his pedigree, but maybe he has some ideas that could be really cool with that.
I'm looking at the current Steam charts, and this is only Steam, granted, but for the month of August, for the month of July, Apex Legends averaged 170k players, 130k players concurrent, and they peaked at around 330k, 270k in the last 2 months. Those are sort of their averages. PUBG doing still astoundingly well, Bless. 184 really? Concurrent players in August. And again, this is only Steam. We know that Apex, a lot of people play on console as well. 184 played concurrently, average 184K, and they peaked at 444K in August. And the numbers have been pretty solid, and I'm not seeing any gigantic drops or rises in player base, except for some weird events that happened maybe last year, and I'm assuming that's a big map reveal or whatever. But PUBG is still very popular, still has a very, very big player base when compared to when we talk about games. I think it's so easy to say dead game, and I fucking hate when people that. But it's so easy to say, like, oh, because I don't really play it, and it's not in my group of friends, and my group of friends are not currently playing this video game. I'm not hearing a whole lot about it. I'm sure the game is dying, and not a whole lot of people are playing it. But PUBG is still a very healthy game in terms of player base, and I think they've found that niche. I think they've found that area of people that said, "Meh, maybe Warzone is too arcadey for me, or maybe Apex is, I don't like all these abilities. I just want that sort of more toned down, realistic. I want to have all of my ammo clips and all of my barrel stocks and
PUBG is probably the most hardcore of the major battle royales, right? If you're comparing it to Warzone, Fortnite, and Apex, like, PUBG is the one where you really got to take into account a lot of things, right? You got to take into account bullet drop. You got to take into account, like, footsteps even more. Like, you got to be way more aware, and it's way more, I guess, simmy might be the word.
Way more intricate, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Than the others. And so I definitely understand why the audience would still be there. In fact, like, I think when we're talking about success for these types of games as well, you know, we're talking about free-to-play versus paid, right? And PUBG, I believe, is still a paid game. You still have to pay to play PUBG. At the very least on PC, I've not checked out PUBG Mobile. I don't know how much it costs there. But on Steam, PUBG, I believe, is still like $30 if you want to actually buy it. And with that, when you look at the sales numbers, I got an article here from PCGamesN.com where this is from July 2020, a year ago. PUBG had crossed the 70 million mark in terms of actual game sales. They had sold 70 million copies. That Holy is not a fuck. Thing that many games whatsoever can actually say. And I think we often forget how hot PUBG
hit,
was.
You're stoked to hit 5 mil, 4 mil, 10 yeah. mil. Like.
Like, if you remember, there's a reason why people were copying PUBG. In 2017, PUBG was breaking records by the day, by the week, right? When we talk about concurrent players, the concurrent players on PUBG back in 2017 were ridiculous, and they sold so many copies. And if we're talking about a free-to-play game, right, we're talking about something like Apex and something like Warzone, you know, like, they're making so much money off of microtransactions and selling packs and selling characters or whatever the thing may be that they're selling, versus PUBG, which is getting money per copy, right? I'm sure they have, and correct me if I'm wrong, they added in a battle pass like not too long after Fortnite like did their battle pass and everything, and so they're probably making sales off of that too. PUBG still very well performing game.
But yeah, shout out to Brendan for just saying, kind of, I want to move on, and maybe you get to a point where you feel satisfied with what you've done. Maybe there's not a whole lot more you can do and add to it, and you want to move on to the next phase in your life. And yeah, go chase that next thing you want to do, because you've already kind of conquered this space in a way, you know?
Exactly. Andy, let's keep rolling with the Roper Report. Story number 5, Life is Strange TV series is still in the works, with Shawn Mendes now overseeing the music. This is Matt Kim at IGN. A Life is Strange TV adaptation is still in the works, and it's now enlisted Grammy-nominated singer Shawn Mendes to oversee the music for the series. A Life is Strange TV series was first announced back in 2016 after Legendary picked up the adaptation rights from Square Enix. Since then, however, there has been no news about the show. Now, along with Mendes, Life is Strange also adds Anonymous Content, a production company behind shows like 13 Reasons Why, whose dark take on high school life may fit well with the premise of Life is Strange. When Legendary first announced plans to make a Life is Strange TV show, only the first game was released. It followed art student Max Caulfield, who must survive bullies and disappearing students while also navigating her ability to rewind time. Since then, however, there have been many more games in the series, including Life is Strange 2, Life is Strange Before the Storm, and the upcoming Life is Strange True Colors. I forgot this is happening, and I'm honestly being reminded and seeing that it seems like they're making moves to continue to make it happen has me a bit excited, because I actually kind of missed the first Life is Strange. You know, I really love that universe, and Life is Strange very much changes with every iteration now. You know, Life is Strange 2 picked up with two completely different characters. Life is Strange True Colors is also using different characters. I do miss Max and Chloe. I miss that relationship. I miss that world, and I want a reason to go back, right? I know we're getting the remaster next year. I like the idea of having a reinterpretation in the form of an actual TV series, because I think there's not many video games I would say that would fit well as being adapted to a TV show, but I think Life is Strange is one of them. I could easily see that being done well. I know they're tapping the production company behind 13 Reasons Why. That makes me pause a little bit because like I liked 13 Reasons Why fine at the time. I didn't love 13 Reasons Why, and I don't know if
that show's pretty controversial, right?
That show is pretty controversial, and I don't want the same controversy with Life is Strange. You know, I think Life is Strange, the game, does such a good job of introducing topics that, you know, skirted the line of, oh shit, like this person is having suicidal thoughts.
They're going
Yeah, this person is like abusive, and they go there in quite a few places. The ways that 13 Reasons Why goes there are ways that I don't totally adore, and I think, you know, could have been done way better. I don't want the same thing for Life is Strange. I'd rather that be taken with I'd rather be that be done with a lot more care and a lot more nuance. And so like that makes me pause a little bit, but just because they did that with Life is Strange or with 13 Reasons Why, it doesn't mean they're automatically going to do that kind of thing with Life is Strange, and I hope that's not the case.
And 2016 is when this was first announced. When did the first did Life is Strange come out in 2016? I can't believe it's been that long.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's been 2016.
That's wild. I would have assumed it was like, I mean,
it might have been 2015, honestly. I think Life is Strange might have came out late 2015.
You got to assume if that's, you know, if Legendary is picking up adaptation rights in 2016, then it likely came out a year before that. I don't have much to say about this other than I'm excited for you, Blessing. I'm excited for you to get your little TV show. I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
Shawn Mendes, he's the guy with Camila Cabello, right? Or like they kind of had a thing, will they, won't they, sort of?
Oh, I don't know.
Really? Let me Google that.
He? Yeah, Google that, because I'm actually curious now that you
said
that.
I always thought it was a, like, everybody wanted. Oh, yeah, because they had a song together, and everybody was like, are they going to finally get together? But I don't fully know.
Yeah, looking through his songography right
he
now.
He says that she fell in love with him. I was completely in love with him. That's the quote.
Wow. good for him.
Okay. Yeah, good for him. I don't know if they're together anymore, but I just know that there was always this sort of will they, won't they drama that everybody kind of wanted them to fall in love, especially with the way that they look at each other in their videos. It's like, wow. It's very lustful. Plus, very lustful.
Wow. I mean, I don't know much about Shawn Mendes. I do like that they're tapping an actual singer-songwriter for Life is Strange, because the music means so much to that franchise. I think music in the first Life is Strange and Before the Storm really set the tone of that world in that period. And, you know, I think if we're going to make a Life is Strange TV show, you got to do it with the right music. Music should be on the forefront of your mind. And so them
this could be
Shawn
huge
for it is
this,
big.
This could be really huge for an audience that isn't necessarily into video games, just to be a fan of somebody who peruses Netflix and maybe hears a recommendation about that new YA show that everybody's recommending. And, you know, it's from the people that made 13 Reasons Why. And it's about a girl who has like time powers. And
God, I hope they don't.
I hope they don't market it as
from the people from 13 Reasons. That's the reason why that like concerns me, is like I don't want it.
But a lot of people like that show though, right? Like
a lot of people like that show. A lot of people hated that show, okay. And like for good reason. Like I understand like both perspectives, because I think it was it was an entertaining, well put together show, but just not in the way that it handled the controversial stuff. That's where like a lot of people really didn't like that show. And you know, I think putting in the marketing from the folks behind 13 Reasons Why automatically puts Life is Strange in a certain bucket that it shouldn't be in, because Life is Strange like already exists as its own thing that is loved for its own reasons. But you know, I do think that this does have the potential to be big for the reasons you're talking about. I think there is such a good market for people who are into the like the young adult series, right? People who are into things like 13 Reasons Why,
in the way that people love Riverdale. Sabrina on Netflix, like in that sort of, I think it'll hit that sort of audience where people, you don't even have to say this is from a video game. You can just be like, here's 1,000%. This new show.
Are you kidding? If I pitched somebody, if Life is Strange was on Netflix and I went to one of my sisters and I was like, hey, there's this new show on Netflix. It's about a girl in a small town in the Pacific Northwest.
I'm in.
I'm in already. Right. But like, who, like, it's a high school drama, but she can rewind time and like, she wants to save her friend who keeps dying. Like, I think there's something there that you can really sell to an audience that doesn't need to be video gamey at all. I think that story works so well just as a story.
What's that Archie show?
Riverdale.
Yeah, I think you could kind of hit that level.
1,000%. Yeah. I'm very excited for this. We'll have to wait and see if they stick the landing. Either way, I'm going to watch the hell out of this. I hope it comes out. that's where I'm at, is I hope it comes out because nothing's ever guaranteed, but I would like to see this. Last news story, story number six, Xbox's Tomb Raider timed exclusivity deal was reportedly worth $100 million. This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Microsoft's 2015 exclusivity deal for Rise of the Tomb Raider was reportedly worth $100 million. That's according to the LinkedIn profile of former Square Enix corporate development director Fabian Rossini, the exec who claims to have negotiated the deal with Microsoft. Rossini's profile was widely circulated on social media this week before the claim was seemingly edited out, but not before it was archived by a Twitter user. Twitter will always get you. If accurate, the figure offers a rare glimpse into the actual cost of platform exclusivity deals. However, it's likely that the figure mentioned by Rossini includes other elements beyond the straight deal price, such as marketing commitments or an advance of profits. The $100 million figure would be roughly in line with another high-profile exclusivity deal that recently had its figure shared in the public domain, the Epic Games Store deal for Borderlands 3. According to confidential documents shared during the Epic versus Apple court trial this summer, the Unreal Engine firm paid $115 million for 6 months exclusivity on its store. Microsoft's Tomb Raider deal, in comparison, was for 1 year of exclusivity. According to Xbox, Rise of the Tomb Raider had sold well over 1 million units as of 2 months after its release. The game also launched on PC. As of 2017, it had sold 7 million units, which also includes the PS4 version that arrived in 2016. Andy, do you remember when this was going down back in the day when Xbox got the exclusivity for Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Yeah, I remember. Everybody was worried it was going to die.
And yeah.
It kind of didn't do as great as they wanted.
I remember it being such a big deal. Like, people were upset.
Oh, yeah.
Because we got the original Tomb Raider reboot game for all consoles, and Xbox grabbing that for exclusivity made people go feral.
It kind of died. Yeah,
it kind of did, and honestly kind of did die, but I think that's partly because of the exclusivity, but then also I want to say it came out the same week as Fallout 4, and that really fucked that game because the hype for Fallout 4 was astronomical. But yeah, Fallout 4, really good game. Was it overhyped?
Oh, come on.
Maybe especially just a tad. Maybe just a tad.
Was it broken as fuck?
But we knew it was going to be broken as fuck. It's Bethesda. You know, it comes to the territory. It comes to the territory. Did I get to hang out with the homie Nick Valentine? Yes. And that's what matters to me, damn it.
So this was 2013. Let me look for Fallout 4 release. 2015 was Fallout 4 release. But
well, this was 2015.
Rise of the Tomb Raider. Got it. Okay, yeah. I remember
good.
That. I remember that. That was a kind of a turmoiled state of the industry. Is that even a word, turmoiled?
We're making it one.
All right. There you go.
Yeah, I'm looking up. Hold on. Let me look up the two release dates because I actually don't know for sure.
It's got to be so interesting to kind of be in the middle of that. And as a studio head, wonder, weighing the pros and cons. And there's just so many situations that I would love to be in the room of and just kind of take myself back and hear what those conversations are. Is this $100 million worth losing out on potential sales and potential word of mouth? And, you know, will the game be less popular by the time it comes out on the other consoles? Like, that's all that stuff is so interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm looking up. So I looked up both the release dates for Fallout 4 and Rise of the Tomb Raider. Both of them came out November 10th, 2015. They came out not the same week, the same day.
Jesus.
They came out. And that, if you want to talk about a losing battle.
One of them was cross-console.
Yeah, when one of them was cross-console, one of them obviously had way more hype because people hadn't gotten a numbered Fallout game since 2008, if we're talking about Fallout 3, right? Like, people were hyped for Fallout 4. I remember it clearly because I stayed up. It was one of those ones where I went to the midnight launch, showed up at Best Buy, lined up so I can pick up the game at midnight, and then went home. I had work early the next morning, but I was like, I got to experience just a little bit of Fallout 4 because I had it in my hand. So I put it in, booted it up, and I waited for the install because, of course, that's going to take a while. Like, not only the downloading of the game on my PS4, but then once you click into the game, it has an additional install thing, and I'm watching the Fallout animation that they have on the screen, waiting for that, and then finally I'm able to boot into the first part of the game where you create your character and do all the pre-nuke activities. And, you know, that was an experience for me. And, like, it's funny because I wonder what the Metacritic for both these games are, because I remember Rise of the Tomb Raider was reviewed critically really well. I think Ryan McCaffrey reviewed it for IGN and he gave it a 9.3 out of 10. And GameSpot gave it a 9 out of 10. On Metacritic, Rise of the Tomb Raider is sitting 86. At 86 on PC, 88 on... Oh, it says 88 on PS4, but that must have been when it was re-released. But yeah, like, it's funny because, like, it's a testament to how much Metacritic, at the end of the day, doesn't really matter for reception of a game. I know Fallout 4 isn't a game that everybody looks at as the masterpiece of a generation by any means, but was the more popular game, was the game that had way more talk, was the game that kind of mattered more for that year. And I mean, to the story, right? I think looking at the deal numbers, it's fascinating to see the price of exclusivity, because I look at this and I wonder, for Microsoft, was it worth it? You know, and the answer is probably not. Looking at the 1 million in sales, I don't think that's enough to justify the $100 billion deal. Maybe over the years they eventually recoup that money, and it turns out to not be a big deal that they did what they did. But it's fascinating to see this and to then look forward and see how exclusives are being treated nowadays, where Xbox is very much like, no, we're gonna buy studios, we're gonna go hard on Xbox Game Pass. Like, we're not gonna make as many high profile exclusivity, like temporary exclusivity deals of this level where we're doing a sequel. If we're gonna do that, we're gonna do that maybe for like the first in a series, like how PlayStation has done with Deathloop or Ghostwire Tokyo, right? Like, I think things like that might make a little bit more sense, but it's fun to see the chess pieces kind of shift and move as lessons get learned in this way.
And what does that amount mean today? Like, if this deal were to go down today, what would $100 million in 2015 mean in the year 2021? Yeah. Like, how much higher does that number go? All that stuff is just so insanely interesting to me.
Andy, I can't wait to see how the next Tomb Raider does. But the next Tomb Raider game... it's probably so far away. That was the best transition I could do. I thought I did the Doctor Strange thing where I looked at all the different timelines. What can I extrapolate from this new story to make a transition? But Andy, a good transition is so far away. If I know what's coming out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Lake for Xbox Series X/S, Xbox One, and PC. I've heard good things about that game. Cookie Clicker for PC. That can't be right. Cookie Clicker for PC.
Cookie Clicker. Yeah. Cookie Clicker.
That came out in like 2014.
Yeah, a little re-release.
Are they re-releasing it on Steam? Good for them. Dude, Cookie Clicker. I spent so much time in college playing Cookie Clicker in the middle of class.
On your
good
phone?
Good times. On my laptop. I mean, we had our laptops out taking notes, quote unquote, taking notes. You know what I mean, Andy? Oh. I was playing.
No, I don't know what you mean. number of things.
I was playing the amount of games I played during class. It's a miracle that I graduated, right? Because I was playing Cookie Clicker in the middle of class. I downloaded an N64 emulator and played Tetris in the middle of class. I 100%ed Mario 64 in the middle of class. Did I beat Zelda Ocarina of Time? You bet I did. All in the middle of class. That was
Holy
a great
shit.
Semester. Yeah, dude.
Damn. See, I went to an art school where I knew I'm paying a fuckload for this, and also I got to be drawing stuff, so like I don't got time to be playing games in the middle, unfortunately. I feel like when I went to school is when my game time significantly dropped, because I was still working full-time at Best Buy, and I would get home and just grind away at a project until like 6 in the morning, and was it worth it, Bless? I'm here at Kinda yes. Funny.
I mean, exactly.
No, it was not.
Andy, I was a communication major, so I didn't have to worry. I was like, oh, I got this shit on lock. I'm going to fucking ace these tests. Fuck stunning. El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron is out today for PC. Opus, Echo of Star Song is out for PC and Mac. Galaxy Squad is out for Xbox One. Rogue Spirit for PC. Rava, the Cyclops Cruise for Switch. Alveol for Switch.
Alveoli. Alveoli
for Switch,
maybe?
Thank you.
I don't know.
That sounds better. Okay. Grit for PC. World War II Bunker Simulator for PC. Rogue Spirit for PC. Zombies, a Killer Queen remix launches today on PC and will only be available until its official arcade cabinet launch in 2022. As a reminder, that is the single player mode spinoff for Killer Queen, as I understand it. Cloud Gardens is out today on PC and Xbox, and then No Man's Sky has a Frontiers update that looks really fascinating. They released the trailer today, and that game keeps on growing in ways that I don't understand. It looks like they've added settlements. They have like a Star Wars cantina situation going on some of the planets. It looks really cool. It sounds really cool. Congratulations, No Man's Sky fans.
This game looks amazing. I wish I had time for it.
Exactly right. New dates for you. Tennis Manager 2021 comes out of early access into full release on September 7th, 2021. And then Iron Harvest Complete Edition is releasing on October 26th, 2021 for PS5 and Xbox Series X.
Another final quick news thing. Today, Tim the Tatman, former Twitch streamer, announced that he has signed an exclusive deal to stream on YouTube Gaming, which is a pretty gigantic move for one of the larger content creators on the platform. Dr. Lupo had announced his announcement 2 days ago that he's moving from Twitch to YouTube, and Tim the Tatman did the same today. And apparently they did the same thing 2 years ago as well when they both announced that they were signing to Twitch. And so now they are both moving to YouTube, and they mention how YouTube's hungry to make their content creators feel cared for. It's like, all right, but like, how much was that paycheck? Like, it's
all that paycheck was astronomical,
massive. Yeah, because like, it is so clear that when you move to YouTube, you lose a lot of money, and you try to make it up in other ways through exclusive deals like this. So, you got to assume that it was a pretty hefty paycheck to make that move worth it.
Deals of the day for you. I just got an email note. Sorry, Kevin, what's that?
I was just going to say, like, I hope that in, like, 5 years, like, this exclusivity deal, I hope we find out how much they made. That'd be cool to find out, too.
They actually announced.
Like the Xbox exclusivity thing that just...
We likely will. Yeah, I'd assume we likely will, because I feel like that happens with most people on the platform whenever there are deals made. Like, we heard about Ninja's Mixer deals several months later or whatever it was, or maybe it was the day of, I don't remember. Anyway, I feel like we will hear about it.
Again, deal of the day for you. I just got an email notification that HBO Max has just added the Harry Potter 8 film collection.
Oh.
So there you go. It's a random notification I got during the show. Mm-hmm. We have PS Plus games for September. Overcooked, All You Can Eat is coming to PS5, PS Plus for September, along with Hitman 2 on PS4 and Predator Hunting Grounds on PS4. And then coming soon to Game Pass, September 2nd, you're getting Craftopia, Final Fantasy 13, Signs of Sojourner, and Surgeon Simulator 2. September 7th, you're getting Crown Trick. And then on September 9th, you're getting Breath Edge, Nuclear Throne, and The Artful Escape. Now it's time to squad up. Remember, you can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get your questions read on the show, you can catch the post show, you can skip ads, and of course you can squad up just like Alex Suarez did. Alex writes in with a PlayStation and real life squad up and says, "Hello everybody. I moved to Philly in the past years, and guess what? Moving to a new city during a pandemic with no friends is incredibly lonely. Alex Suarez, I feel ya." I feel ya and I relate. I'd love to meet up with some best friends near me. I'm vaccinated.
You can relate.
Who can relate? Play on PlayStation. If you guys want to reach me on Instagram or Twitter, I am at Alex B. Suarez. Or play on PlayStation, I am OMG, like, really. That is OMG. Something tells me that might be a typo, because he writes in, there's like another form you can fill in with your actual username, and he says, OMG, life, really. So Adam on PlayStation, either OMG, life, really, or OMG, like, really.
The K is even next to the F, so yeah, that something had to have happened there. Something had to have happened.
Yeah, maybe it was autocorrect. Who knows? Yeah. Andy, people can go over to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. We're not live, but I believe you do have some you're wrongs for us.
I do have one you're wrong, and it says that Snowbike Mike is correct that nobody gives a fuck about Dead Space, that everybody does want EA big. So That's wild. I didn't think that'd be the case, but it looks like Snowbike Mike was right. That's wild. God.
Wow, yeah, that's wild.
Thought a lot of people would have spoken up.
It's crazy that EA wrote that in. It's like, it's kind of fucked up, you know? They're the ones that make the decision. What are they doing over there?
Crazy.
Tomorrow's host for Kinda Funny Games Daily are Janet and Tim. That's right. Get hyping on Friday. We're rounding it out with me and Tim fucking Geddes. Remember, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, game daily.